Welcome, welcome, welcome to Crowns and Tiaras podcast. I am Desire, your host, and that is Desire with a Z. Don't play with me. So today we have a really good guest on. She represents women empowerment. She represents women in struggle that have overcome and conquered their struggles. She is a playwright. She has a really good book out. She is also a single mother, and she teaches junior high school students, I believe. Ladies and gentlemen, kings and queens, let's welcome Ebony Rubin, also known as Bello Inc.
Yeah.
Welcome, queen. Welcome.
Nice. Thank you for having me. Appreciate you.
Of course. You are definitely a great energy. I just had to have you.
Yes.
So how you been rocking your crown in these last 6 months of the pandemic, queen?
Honestly, I've been being a mom and a teacher during these past 6 months, especially when we first switched to remote learning. Like, I was teaching online remotely and doing the homeschooling with my daughter and doing my own homeschooling because I'm still in school as well, trying to get my master's degree. So it was a lot. It was very overwhelming. Mm. I feel like now, like, I was able to take, like, a little short break. Mm-hmm. But it's, like, now I'm jumping right back into the ball game because we about to be in September.
Yes.
So, school, everything is starting back up. Training's starting back up. Yep. I just finished my summer intensive classes. So, I was like, oh, thank God for that.
Wow.
Now all I'm doing is just regular work PDs, which is always good and a refresher for me because it gets me ready for my kids.
For the new year, right?
Yep.
So you said you study and you're still in school doing your master's degree.
Yes.
That is awesome.
Yeah. I'm in
Relay. Tell us more about your master's degree.
Yeah, I'm in Relay's graduate teachers program. Mm. I'm working on getting my teacher certification in school generalists. So just to teach like multiple content. So like it's for ELA, social studies, math, science. Just,
wow.
Yeah, it's something that I just switched into. Okay. Like I really didn't know what I wanted to do after graduating undergrad. Mm-hmm. I thought I wanted to do psychology, but things ain't work out in my favor.
That's all right, because you're still going. You ain't stopped.
Yeah.
You are still going. You're still at it, and that's what it is. And then your daughter gets a chance to see her mom, you know, working hard towards her goals. And then you're also an educator for junior high school students. And I know you have a teenager, right?
Yes, yes. So she's getting ready for high school. But, yeah, she's much older than my kids. She's getting ready for high school.
Oh, my.
But she definitely has been a part of my journey.
Yes.
Definitely. She always see me hustle and grind, and that's where she gets her little hustling spirit from.
Yes.
As well. So definitely.
Wow. That's awesome. That is awesome. So I also want you to tell us about your playwrights. I've had the opportunity to act in one of your plays. In case the listeners don't know, I am an actress as well as a model, but my passion is public speaking and inspiring. So, yeah, I did work with Ebony on one of her plays. Let's talk about those.
Yeah.
Plays.
Okay. So, yes, the playwright that she was in, that was my second playwright that I wrote and directed myself. Him and her, which you was the leading lady. And okay. That piece for me was just like a love romance, but told through Black comedy. Like I feel that as a young Black woman, there's a lot of things that we see on the TV screen that mm-hmm. don't represent us and modern time and how we interact and show each other love and support. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to just reflect, I just wanted to have a play that reflects, you know, what it is to be a young lady single in New York and being a single mom, and how it is dating and being on the dating scene. So
And you did that.
Pretty cool. Yeah. And my second playwright is, well, my first, that was my second playwright, him and her. But my first playwright, I actually wrote when I was in John Jay, a part of their, one of their courses that they have. Mm-hmm. It's called Seeing Rape. And I wrote a play titled Consensual.
Right.
And I wrote this play, and it was a simple assignment of just like writing like a 8-page dialogue of just of a situation, any type of situation regarding like rape. And some people did personal and some people just made up stories, but I kind of took my personal story and made it into like a non-fictional piece. Mm-hmm. And it turned out really, really good, and it got selected to be a part of the stage rape reading at John Jay in the Black Box Theater in 2016. And I was, and from there, it was like, okay, I probably have something, because people in school would stop me and be like, hey, weren't you the girl that was a part of? Mm-hmm. And your play was you know, I was like, she was like, oh, and once I started seeing other people and people actually like recognizing me on campus is like, oh, okay, I got something good. I know I got something good, because this was just school based. And and then I've been friends with Stack Cadero's sisters for a few years afterwards, and finding out that she was a playwright and she was a director, and working with her on one of her pieces, like just coming in as an extra.
Yep.
I was able to rub shoulders with her, and she like been a coach and a mentor for me as well, and she helped me with doing it, showcasing my playwright again, and just, and then from there I'm like, I need to turn this into a book.
I need to
make it something for young girls who are young parents and just trying to make it in this world and really trying to put their best foot forward. So from Consensual, I wrote my book, When Your Teen Is Having a Baby. And that right there is like really a memoir of like how I overcome from dealing with depression, guilt, forgiving myself.
Right. Because you were a young mom.
Really, yeah, I was a teen mom. So it was really like me coaching myself through my hardship.
Right.
And like, I really felt like a lot of the times, especially being a young mom, I didn't get the support that I should have gotten. That
you got a lot of grief.
Me.
Yeah,
I got a lot of like, you a grown woman now, so now you gotta act grown, and it really was like
no support.
No support, because you can't tell a 16-year-old just because she's having a baby she's grown. And that's just my opinion.
Right.
You can have a baby, but that doesn't make you grown. You have to actually start educating that young person to step into their new position as a parent.
Right.
And in a more effective way. And that's just basically what I'm talking about. My book is for educators. It's for social workers. Yes. It's for teachers. It's for parents as well, who may be dealing with teenagers, who maybe they might be new grandparents and they might have a teenage child who's having a baby.
Yeah.
And a guide on what to do with the situation. Like, everybody's situation is different. And I know for me, I was a little bit fortunate, but I still feel like I overcame a lot and I'm still overcoming, and I want, you know, to uplift my people.
Yes. And also not just to, not only to uplift, but let's try and change that mindset that, you know, 'cause we have this big stigma in the Black community that if you have a baby at a young age, you know, you're a disgrace and, you fast and you promiscuous. And it's like, stop that. Mm-hmm. Babies are mm-hmm. blessings. And a pregnant really, young woman should be supported because that's a really hard transition for her.
Yeah. And it's really like dismantling the whole stereotypes
yes.
of what they have out against us. Oh, you, she not going to be able to finish high. She going to be a mm-hmm. high school dropout. Mm-hmm. She going to make multiple babies. She going to be a welfare queen because mm-hmm. she not going to be able to do.
Right.
Exactly. Right. She going to have to worry, rely on child support.
Right.
She'll
never
versa.
Get married because she's going to have a child out of wedlock already.
Exactly.
It's just ridiculous. Exactly. And I think that it's mental. It's unhealthy. It's mental health. It's a mental health issue in our community that we really got to look into, be real about, and deal with it.
Right. Because I feel like at the end of the day, and for me, I also point this out. I highlight this also in my book. It's like the sex education in our community needs to be more culturally responsive to our youth. I feel like a lot of the times we separate the truth from our kids, and that also leads to our risky behaviors because we do what we see. We model, we only follow what is being modeled out in front of us. So if I don't have no, and that's a lot of what I talked about, like I didn't have a lot of
support
women in my life to say, hey, when you meet a guy, you gotta be like this and you have to do that. I didn't have a model female right. in my life. All I had was my father and my brothers, and mm. that alone wasn't really supportive for me growing up socially right. around boys who like me and older boys looking at me. I didn't have that to say, hey, when someone comes up to you, they don't, if you don't want them to touch you,
you gotta say
this
that.
Is how you, this is mm-hmm. how you say that. This is how you, you know, the whole about consent and everything. Mm-hmm, it wasn't mm-hmm. culturally responsive to like, okay, this is what you do. Right. I'm so used to, like, if you want someone, I'm so used to me thinking that if somebody likes me, I have to do what they say in order mm-hmm. to keep them around me. And I didn't really have that, you know, self-confidence and self-worth when I was younger to really say, like, no, you know, if you like me, you wouldn't force me to do right. certain things with you or take risky, mm-hmm. risky behaviors and be with you. I wouldn't have to do these things. So yeah, it's a lot of learning and growing, like mm-hmm. definitely a lot of learning and growing. And I feel it's definitely culturally responsive to what we need in our community at
absolutely.
This time.
Too many of us women, myself included, we become victims of that. We don't understand mm-hmm. our sexuality, so we do get taken advantage of. We don't even understand sex or love or anything, so we do get taken advantage of.
Yeah, we get in that sexual abuse, you know, it lives mm-hmm. through us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It lives through us, and I speak about this a lot, and a lot of the times, you know, I get like she's dragging it types of looks, but it's true. As a dark-skinned woman, I feel like I'm always overly sexualized by the man, male gaze. Like, I feel like mm-hmm. soon, automatically, I'm put into a category where I'm promiscuous, I'm sexual, and I am mm-hmm. a sex object. And people don't really see the real authentic,
mm-hmm.
the brains and really the beauty of, mm-hmm. of me, because they just looking at my sexual appearance. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, I feel like that has a lot to do with society and like mm-hmm. what they put out there, but also it's a self-confidence thing as well. I had to realize like how I show myself is how people mm-hmm. was gonna see me.
Well,
so I'm promoting my brain more than ever.
Mindset.
You know
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying? And that's what our young ladies need to realize. Like, mm-hmm. And I feel like because, and I'm so happy that I'm blessed with having a daughter, even though, you know, boy moms is cool too, but being boy moms are cool. I don't want no backlash, but no smoke. But having my daughter really helped me with one, like, okay, I'm not used to being around girls because I'm just automatically used to just dealing with my brothers and having my dad in my life. So having a little, having a little girl, I had to really, like, be like, how do I want my daughter to know? Like, she's getting at that age where she's going to be a freshman next school year in high school. And I'm like, okay, it's a different ball game. It's a different conversation that I need to be having with her because she's going to be exposed and her experience is really going to elevate into her young adulthood. And I can't tell her what to do. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to be there. And this is something that I always tell my daughter, like, all I can do is give you advice. You have the choice. It's your body.
If you want to take
it's your mind. It's your life. Because at the end of the day, I gave birth to you. I can't tell you what to do.
Right.
And you know, it works. It works. It may not be everybody's cup. Like, some people are not that open. And I have some people who, if I post a video of me and my daughter conversations, they'd be like, yes, this is how I talk to my kid, and they'd be all for it. But when I speak to my daughter, I'm 100% honest with her. Like, 100% honest with her, because I don't want her going out having to question, having to get answers from an outside source.
Right.
You know, and even if someone, and I always tell her, don't ever take what I say as accuracy, because I'm your parent. You got to listen to me. That's not true. That's not true. I don't own your mind. So if I say something and it doesn't seem right, Google it. Ask questions. Get research and get other responses before you make a decision. But I don't want her to just automatically never come to me first. I want to be that first source. So,
I remember a time when my oldest son, who's 19 now, when he was 12, he came to me. He's only in sixth grade, and he came to me. He's like, Mom, I think I'm ready to have sex. So I'm like, you think you're ready to have sex? I'm like, well, with who? He said, this girl in my class. So I'm like, okay. I said, well, how old is she? Said she's 12, just like me. I said, so does she know about sex? He said, yeah, she says she does, and she says she wants to teach me. So I says, okay. I said, that's fine. I said, so I said, but I said, you have to, I said, you, one part of having sex is that you have to use a condom. I said, do you know what condoms are? He said, yeah, I saw them. I saw a condom before. So I said, well, I have one. I gave him a condom, like a regular, you know, condom. And I says, I want you to try this on in the next couple of days and tell me if you could fit it. I said, if you cannot fit this condom, you're not ready to have sex yet, because you cannot have sex without this condom. Because I don't want to control, you know, when he feels like he's ready to have sex, you know, and I know girls, girls tend to be a little bit more faster, but mentally, you know, when it comes to those types of things too. But boys also are interested at 12 and 11. You know what I mean? Like, I got my menstrual at 11, so I know a boy is thinking about sex at 11. Not that I was thinking about sex, but life is happening now, right? We're maturing now. So I wasn't trying to, like, shoot him down or make him feel bad about it. I was open to him about it, but I was honest. And if you don't use this condom, and I went on to our home computer, I said, because if you don't use this condom when you have sex with her, this is what your penis is going to look like. And this is, and it's going to hurt, and you're never going to be able to get rid of this sickness. And you're going to have to take medicine for the rest of your life if you don't use a condom. And I started to show him different penises and vaginas that were infected with STDs.
You used the scare tax.
I did. Because, you know, it's like, I panicked for a second. I was like, hold up, I got this.
No, you can't.
But you know what? He wasn't even scared. He was like, wow. He was like, wow, Mom. He was like, I didn't know that. He was like, you know, I'm glad that you showed me that. He goes, but I still want to have sex, so I'm going to see if I can fit this condom. So I'm like, all right, cool. So like a week later, he comes back and he's like, you know, I can't even fit the condom yet. So I told her that we can't have sex yet. We have to wait a little while until I could fit this condom, because my mom said in order to have sex, we have to use the condom. So I was like, that's what's up. So then he comes back when he's 14. And he's like, I need bigger condoms.
Right. Like, because you were supposed to give him the NYC. You try to give him the gold wrapper, knowing damn well he can't fit no gold wrapper. I like your logic, because I know what you did. Because you saying he couldn't fit it. I'm like, yeah, she gave him. She gave him the
large, big boy. Right.
The big boy
the
one.
Garbage bag. He wasn't,
ain't no 12-year-old fit in that. Mm-hmm. Now, lifestyle. He probably would have been like, okay, I'm going to get...
right. If he had got the regular NYC one.
Mm-mm, yeah, he would have got crazy with the NYC ones, and them things would have been popping. You would have been a grandma.
Okay. But... So once he realized he couldn't fit that big-ass condom, he was like, no, like, I can't.
No. Yeah. But,
yeah.
And you know, it's so crazy because my daughter, when she was around, I want to say like around 8 or 9,
mm-hmm.
She came out to me and basically was like, I'm bisexual.
Wow.
And, you know, I kind of had the same kind of reaction as you, because my reaction was, okay, well, are you having sex with men? I mean, with boys? Well, she's a little girl, so I'm like, are you having sex with boys? She's like, no. I'm like, have you ever, you know, fooled around with a boy, like kiss, touch, you know, have anybody, any boy touch you? She like, no.
Mm-hmm.
Just like hang out a little bit, but no. And I'm like, well, what about females? Have you ever, you know, kissed on a female? Have a female ever touched you? Like, have y'all ever fooled around? She's like, no. I said, maybe. I'm like, I'm not going to. I didn't shut her down right there and told her, well, you're not bisexual.
Right.
But for me, you can't say you may say you're queer, meaning that you don't have a preference of who you like.
Right.
Right. You might just love people. You might just like being around people. You might just love people. But to put, like, I feel like claiming your sexuality at a young age, you don't really, I feel like you can't really define that. Like, yeah, maybe you are.
You have no experience. Right.
You have no experience with any of the, with, you ain't have no physical experience. Let me say that.
So let me ask you this. If she wanted to just decide, like, at 9 years old, if she decided, I'm bisexual, but I want to dress like a man, would you have supported that?
I would have supported that.
Mm-hmm.
Only because, for me, I feel like at that age, she was definitely being more defiant with how she dressed. She wasn't into the girly stuff.
Right.
But even though, like, it was like flip side. So, like, she would want to dress up girly when she knew it was a special event. But, like, regular days, she likes to be comfortable wearing, like, a nice t-shirt with, like, active clothes, like, sporty wear. Like, really sporty stuff she was into. So, I don't think I don't think it would have been an issue. I probably would have had the conversation more about condoms, like, okay, you can use a finger condom, dam-to-dam, with like different types of.
I didn't know
of...
they had finger condoms. I know they had dam-to-dam.
Yes, baby, they got finger condoms.
I'm learning. You know?
Wow. Because even when a man is playing with you, it's not even for a lesbian thing, because even for a man,
his hands aren't always clean.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and if he has a cut on his finger. And that finger go inside you, that's a transfusion right there, okay? Fluids.
Talk about it.
All right? I would have got more in depth with the whole condom thing, but I know and it's also about knowing your child. Like, I know my daughter, she's really smart. She's the type of kid to Google stuff and learn on her own. So when she comes to me, it's not because she doesn't know. It's because she probably already learned about it or read something about it. And she's trying to figure out what I know.
Exactly. Right.
And how I'm going to respond. So I always check myself before I react. And I feel like that's also a key point for parents as well out there. Like, when your kids come to you, don't just assume they don't know. Because kids know.
Oh, yeah. They're very intelligent.
They're very observant. You trying to sugarcoat it because it's YouTube.
Right.
Google.
And children don't pay attention to what you say. They watch what you do.
And definitely, I definitely walk that walk, but I talk that talk, but I also walk the walk. Like, my daughter sees how I move.
Wow.
Like, she knows. Like, when I wake up in the morning to get ready for work, even though she doesn't have to be at school until an hour later, my daughter's up with me, and I'm not playing with her either. Like,
exactly.
What do you got everything before I walk out this door? Make sure you got all that stuff. You got all your stuff? All right. You got an hour left to rest. When I get off the train, I'm going to be calling you to make sure that you up. And I'm on my daughter. Like, we are in a partnership. Like, we're in a healthy relationship.
Yes. That's the way it should be.
like, she sees me grind. And don't get me wrong, she'll see me talk to someone. There have been times where people, like, a guy friend would try to talk to me, or someone would come around and be all up in our face. And I'll let her know, like, listen.
Right.
You know, when this guy did this, I'll give her examples right in the moment. When a guy comes up to you, or if anybody comes up to you and they trying to pursue you, you don't respond if this is the body language or the conversation that they got, because he should know, like, they should have some type of respect if they see you. Regardless, I'm your mother, even if I look like your friend, they should have some type of respect for you to know, like, okay, watch my language, because I don't know who's this person next to her.
And even not even that, let me show her some respect. Let me show her that I have some manners.
Mm-hmm.
And I have some respect for her to give her to, you know, to want to talk to me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Everybody's not going for that rah-rah gangster talk. You know what I mean? Everybody's not going for that. And a lot of females are taught differently. A lot of young women are taught differently. So young men have to be mindful of that. And I always say, if we stop allowing men to talk to us that have their pants hanging down, they will pull their pants up.
Yep.
Men only get haircuts and get new shoes to impress women. So once we start showing them that these things are not impressive, they'll stop doing them.
Yep. You know? And it's also, like, I'm very, and I feel like this was something that I wasn't taught a lot as being a kid, is I'm very big on communication.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, having a voice. Like, my daughter can express herself with no problem.
Right.
And she's a literal thinker. So it's only black and white when you speak into her. She can't see the gray areas. So it's facts-based. And she...
No opinions. Right.
And she is very straightforward with what she likes and what she doesn't like. And if I think that also promotes her to have healthy relationships with other people.
Of course.
Because people can't play with her.
Right.
And that makes me, that also helps me sleep at night.
Wow. I really enjoy this topic. We got to definitely do another podcast in regards to children, their mindset, sex, preteen sex, and all that. Babies and all that. But let's get back to the book. Let's get back to the plays. And let's get back to your education. What are some of your struggles, or what are some of the things that you have struggled with while doing these things and getting, you know, getting your work?
So I would say a lot of my struggles was dealing with depression and anxiety.
Okay.
Having a lot of anger.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wasn't someone who was verbally expressive a lot. I hold a lot of stuff, and I was very quiet sometimes. Mm-hmm. Even though I was outspoken, I wasn't a easy person to, like, really get out my shell and really show my true colors unless I was, like, upset.
Right.
And it hurted a lot of times, because especially with moving out of my house, I didn't know how to really handle being on my own.
Okay.
And, like, officially going to school every day without anyone waking me up was a struggle. I was late a lot of the times for school, falling back on grades and having to go to night school, finding a babysitter while I was still in high school. Like, I had my daughter going to a childcare center that was in Roosevelt, but during my senior year in high school, I had to take her out and leave her at the childcare services that my group home was providing, because I had night school and because I had internship and because I had to work, I had to change my routines. And I had to now spending every day with my daughter, I'm only spending like maybe 4 hours in the evening with her before I have to get up and do everything all over again. So that was a lot for me, like that separation anxiety from my daughter, thinking that I had to take care of her all the time.
And I think that's a regular feeling though for all mothers, especially new mothers.
Yeah, it was definitely, and then I feel like being young, it was like hard because it's like, I don't know who to trust. Like, who can I leave my baby with? Right. Like, I don't want to just leave her with anyone and something happens to her, because then it's my fault and then people are going to blame me for being a young mom. I should have been more mindful. So I always had that in my back of my mind with anything that I did. But for the most part, it was really like finding work and being on top of my education that was the struggle for me, because I was a single parent, so if it wasn't my dad or, like, family members who was babysitting, it was hard for me to, like, go to class sometimes, to even have a job. Sometimes I lost a lot of jobs because I wasn't able to work, the hours that they my job was operating on. Like, I lost a lot of opportunities. But I always felt like, even though I lost those opportunities, it wasn't for me.
Right.
Like, I never felt like, oh, I didn't get this job because they because they didn't like how I said. Like, you know, they tell you on a job interview not to say, like, to be honest. Like, if they say if anything serious was to come up to stop you from this job, what would it be? I'm
you was being honest.
I'm sure. I got a child.
Right.
So I need a time that I can enter, a time that I can leave, a time where I can have time to be with my child. Like, I'm going to need my time. I was always that type of person. And even now, and I realize, like, a lot of people may say that that's a negative thing, but for me, it wasn't, because I was able to really not waste my time with pursuing a job that I knew was going to give me a hard time if I say I didn't have a babysitter.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, it was basically just that, like, just trying to find employment.
Yeah.
Going through school.
Right. Trying to get through high school, trying to get through school.
Trying to get to high school. High school, yeah. But high school for me, I felt like it was more support for me when I was in high school. It was when I got to college and really, like, moved out of my foster care system and living in my own, where it was like, oh, shit.
Wow. And so, you know, you and I have more in common than I thought. I was also a foster care.
Wow.
Yeah, girl.
Was it voluntary or was you placed?
I was placed.
Because I was voluntary. I was voluntary placement.
Okay, yeah. I was placed then because my parents had crack cocaine addictions, and my mother left 4 children in an apartment. We were in that apartment for like 90 days before people came and found us. I was 6. My brother was 7. And then I had 2 younger siblings that were like 4 or 5. Like, we were all stair steps.
Oh, wow. And that's so crazy, because I'm raised by my father, but my mom had a drug addiction, and ACS ended up taking us away, but my father gained custody of us. So our stories are very similar, but I didn't end up in the system just yet because my dad came in. But then when I got pregnant, my dad was just like, it's just not going to work with you being home. Right. It was no space. And then I had to basically, you know, my dad had to basically sign over his rights. And I was just telling them, like, I didn't even want to live at home. I really was eager to live on my own. So that's why I felt like moving. At first, I was kind of upset, like, why my dad is kicking me out.
Right.
Because it was like, what? Like, I'm supposed to be here with my brother. Like, you can get another room for me and my daughter, and we will be fine living with everybody here in the house.
Yeah.
And that was my mentality. But then as I got a little bit like close to actually my due date and giving birth and about to give birth, I was just like, I don't can't see myself raising my child here because I'm going to be still either be treated like a kid. I'm not going to be able to, I ain't going to see no growth within myself in my womanhood if I stay in this house. So I was already thinking like, okay, what am I doing? Like, I already started planning of what it is that I wanted to do when I got out my house so that I have a clear vision. And a lot of people do that now with like their vision boards and stuff like that.
I've done like 2 or 3 vision boards over the last.
And that's
like,
really helpful.
Yep, it is.
And that's really helpful. Like me, I'm more of a journal. I like to take things down in a journal and like bullet point it. Like I'm not really, I'm really big on like, okay, I know I want to do X, Y, and Z. So like really planning like, okay, this is what I want to do in the next 2 years. In the next 3 years, I want to have this. I want to have that. And like really pacing myself through the stuff that I said I want.
Like I said, you and I have so much in common. I have been writing journals. My first journal came from my foster mom when I was about 11. She was like, just because I was very angry. I was a very, very angry kid because of my circumstances. I always expected my mom to just, you know, pop up out of nowhere and come get all her kids. And we was just all going to be family again. You know, the fairy tale, whatever.
Yeah.
And I was just angry. And I wouldn't allow people to love me. I wouldn't allow people to, like, get in. You know what I'm saying? So my foster mother was like, take this journal and write down your thoughts and how you feel. And if you want to share it with me, you can. But if you don't want to, it's fine. And I did that. And I think she probably was like reading it on a low, but she was really good with me. She was a pediatrician. She was a single mother. She was a like known foster mother in that area where we lived at. She was really good with me. And, it was just an awesome situation. I ended up getting out of foster care because I got calls from family that my grandmother had all my siblings down south. And she was trying to get custody of me through the system to get me down south with my siblings. And you know me, I'm a family person. So it's like family first. That has always been my mindset, family first. So I just dubbed foster care and I went down south. And then it was more hell. It was more hell to pay. So it was just like, so yeah, then I ended up back in New York at the age of 15 on my own, pregnant. I ended up not keeping a baby. You know what? We going to this is about you.
Yeah.
It's not about me.
Yeah, but no, it's okay cuz it's therapeutic.
It
it's
is
okay
cuz
our story is aligned, but it's okay. But no,
But you know, I really appreciate you. You know, let me get I'm going to have to skip through some of these questions because we have just gotten way, way out the way. It's cool though. It's great.
It's cool because it's the dialogue was really strong and it was flowing. It was definitely a flow. But
yes.
Wow. That's exactly, but your story is exactly why I do what I do. You know what I'm saying? It's the reason why I do what I do because I feel like more women, especially women of color, needs to speak out and really share their stories and their growth and their journey, and especially women in professional positions. Like, I'm a teacher, I'm an author, I'm a playwright, and like when kids hear that I've been through, that I was a rape victim and that I overcome, I had a baby and the person that I had a baby with was a damn near rapist who basically is a rapist.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like, wait,
let
what?
Me tell you something. What I find to be true, the older that I get, what I find to be true is that we meet people, men and women, right? Even our counterparts. You're lucky to meet a counterpart that's going to love you that hasn't been through some of the similar experiences that you've been through. Like, if you meet somebody that can love you through your pain because they don't know about that type of pain, then you're blessed. Because it's hard to love somebody who's been through so much pain just like you. It's hard. That's a hard relationship unless they're really willing to heal and you're really willing to heal. But we never meet people that don't have our similar experiences in life.
And you know, one thing, and this is what my father is like, I speak about my dad a lot because that's really my biggest influence in my life. Like, he's like my Yoda. He's my Yoda, for real. because he always told me, especially because my dad was also a teen parent as well. He had my sister, my older sister, when he was 15. And then my next sister was born, my sister right after. Like, he had three kids by the time he was, like, 18. Mm-hmm. Homie was a rolling stone.
Right.
But
that's not also, though. Uh-huh.
But he also told me, like, mm-hmm. especially growing up, because I didn't have my mom and he didn't want me. My father was also is also a very prideful man. Mm-hmm. And with him, it was always never pressuring myself onto others. Right. You know?
Right.
We'll find connection. If me and the person, like, we don't need to be 100% aligned. But if we have some type of
connection,
like chemistry, and some type of connection, then stick to that person.
Right.
But my dad always told me to stay sucker free. I feel like that's why I have minimum friends now.
Yeah, me too,
because
girl.
It's like, if I don't have no connection, and I'm big on connections, because if I don't feel like I can connect with you, it's not going to be no point with me even trying to pursue a friendship, because I feel like it's not going to be a genuine one. We're just going to be associates where we only speak when it's beneficial for either one of us. And I don't like stuff like that.
You know what's crazy? I had a friend who I really adore her a great deal, and I just really kind of somewhat cut her off yesterday, because I realized she only calls me when she's having a problem and she needs advice. And then she never asked me, like, well, how are you doing? How are your kids doing? How is mom doing? She don't never ask about me. I'm like, well, how are you? Blah, blah, blah. And we go right into her issues. And I'm just like, that's a one-sided relationship that I don't want.
Exactly. We can't have that. It's a two-way street. And and people don't see that. It's definitely a two-way street.
It's definitely a two-way street. You know, I really adore the fact that you and your dad have such a close relationship. I wasn't as fortunate to have a bond with my dad. My dad did come back in and out of my life more than my mom growing up, but he was the first person to introduce me to sexual activities. So that was right. So, but whenever I meet sisters who have really good bonds with their dads, and whenever I meet men who are really good fathers to their daughters, like, it just makes my soul smile. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it's like, wow, there's really some real fathers. There's really some good fathers in the world that can be that girl dads successfully. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I love that.
And that's where, and you know, for me, and every around Mother's Day, I get really clammy. Like, I really get into my shell, because I wasn't someone before, even with having my daughter, I wasn't someone who really cared for Mother's Day. Like, my favorite holiday growing up was always Father's Day.
Yeah.
Because he was the active role. He was the active parent in my life, and I seen him clean himself up.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? He wasn't perfect. He definitely wasn't. But I feel like with him,
right, he was perfect in your eyes, though.
He was perfect in my eyes, because mm-hmm. he never laid me astray.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I knew who he was and why he was the man he was, because he shared his stories. And he showed me the right and wrong. Mm-hmm. So I felt like the more that I got older, and the more that I was able to actually have, like, conversations about how I felt growing up as a child, it only helped us build our relationship. Because a lot of like I said, for me, I always felt discriminated against females.
Really?
Yeah. And I speak about this a lot of times. I have connections with females sometimes, because a lot of my discrimination against was from a woman.
Mm.
And being raised by a single dad, I know how it is when a woman likes your dad, but they trying to be nice to
you
because
they really don't like you.
Right? They really don't like you.
Yeah.
And dealing with that a lot of the times, and a lot of the times, my dad has a short temper, so a lot of the times, the women he would date, they say certain things, and I'll get in trouble for it.
Right.
So that also kept me very scared of wanting to get close with any female that my dad would date, and having a mom figure. I never really had that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah. And
really heard it me growing up. Like, I had a hard time listening to women directors where I had to check my own biases. Like,
yeah,
women,
you know,
exactly. And when you deal with those type of experience growing up as an adult, it just follows you.
It does. So, and this is why it's good to get people around you that don't activate your crazy, they don't activate your depression, they don't activate your hurt. You want people that's just going to activate your happiness.
Listen, girl, I know, because I just had to get rid of some toxic family. Okay. Not family, but basically friends slash families.
Right.
Who I felt like, you know, at the end of the day, I'm not a perfect human being.
Nobody is.
Nobody is perfect. At the end of the day, I'm pretty sure you could probably still see my flaws underneath all my accomplishments. But at the end of the day, I put my best foot forward. So when I fuck up and I know I messed up, I can say, hey, I did something wrong.
Right.
I knew I should have did X, Y, and Z. How can I make sure
that this doesn't happen
to happen to me again? Mm-hmm. And you know, sometimes it's still, I'm a Sagittarius, so I learn from my ass. Like, I'm hard-headed. So it's like, even if I do know, I'm still adventurous and I'm optimistic. So I'm like, okay. I always want to try something. I want to try something new. I want to step out of my shell and try something new, see something new. And, you know, and I feel like through experience, you got
to
learn.
You have to learn.
And that's the only way. You fail.
Do your choices. Because we don't, and I always say, and I tell my children, we don't make mistakes. My son said one day, he did something in school, and I said, what happened? He said, Mommy, I made a mistake. I said, you didn't make a mistake. You made a choice. You chose to do that. Now, the question is why? And then how did it make you feel? Because if it made you feel good, then it was a good choice. If it didn't make you feel good, then now you know it was a bad choice.
Right.
So you shouldn't choose that again.
Right, because if you know, exactly, because at the end of the day, don't be sorry.
Don't be
sorry.
Just
do better.
Right.
That's my favorite thing.
Right, when you know better, you do better.
You do better. Like,
girl, we are hearing some points on this call right here, yes.
You definitely do, and that's my thing. Don't be a sorry person.
Right, don't be a sorry person. Just apologize if it needs to be, but you ain't sorry, you know. Right, because, words have power, so... Always like I'm always in my mind to speak a positive word, because it could be a situation going on and you'd be like, you know, automatically the regular thing to say is something that might be negative. For example, when you see something online, right, and you be laughing at it, or if somebody say something, you'd be like, oh, I'm DEAD. You'd be like, oh, I'm like, no, you're not. You're alive. And then you start saying words like that you are, and then you bring that to you, you know, or you bring that around you.
Yep, that's true.
So it's like,
that is definitely
we
true.
Do things subconsciously without effort, without thought, and we don't realize we're cursing ourselves. So I'm always in my head about my mindset and my thinking and the words that I choose, because I understand now that Those things has power.
So much power. Our language has so much power. And how we speak, what we speak into our life is true. It's a lot of the stuff that I speak about in my book, if I saw this when I was young. Like, a lot of the things that I spoke about, I already saw who I am today when I was 16. Like, I knew I was going to either be doing something to help. I knew I was going to either be helping young moms, either being a counselor. I didn't know I was going to be a teacher, but I knew I was going to either be like a social worker or something along the line where I was going to be educating and helping young females like myself in service. And
that's the highest, service to others is the highest. I think they say it's like the highest show of love.
Yep.
Right. Service to others. And this is why I'm always uplifting people in my regular life, you know, friends and family and things like that. But I definitely want to do it on a more larger scale. And this is why I said, let's do the podcast. Cause even though like we sit and we talk about all the things that we've gone through and how similar they are. And that and that is very painful. But at the same time, we could pull good things from it, right? In a positive right. way.
It's a healing because mm-hmm. I had, let me tell you how healing it is. I lived with I went on a dinner date with one of my friends that I grew up with in my group home. And she never knew my story because if you ain't asked, I'm not going to tell.
Right.
So, like, if you ask me the question, I will give you the answer. But back then, I was really ashamed to tell people that I didn't know my baby's father's name. I didn't know his real age. I didn't know all these things and that my baby father lied to me. I was scared because I didn't want people to think that I was just this stupid girl. Which right. I wasn't. Like, I really was tricked. I really was finessed and tricked into a situation. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, like, I have a blessing. And I would push that under the rug and be ashamed. You know right. what I'm saying? Because right. how could you be so stupid? Mm. You know? And
but it's not your that fault.
But it's not my fault. And, you know, it's still healing for me. Because sometimes I still feel like I'm that young girl making stupid choices and having people just falling for fairy tales.
Girl, talk about it, because I feel like that a lot of times, especially when I allow people into my realm, because you don't know what mm-hmm. the intentions are, you know
okay.
what I'm saying?
We, okay, because,
but I'd rather live the fairy tale out. I want to live it out. I want to live it out to the end.
Right.
To see, because right. at least I can say, I didn't give up on my fairy tale. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I you wrote didn't. It out. You don't have no... I should have did this
right.
like I did that done, I've been there done that and it wasn't really my thing so right. like that's the type of person that I am like yeah. I have to experience it in order to be able to give my full feedback and say I like something or I don't like it
right
yeah
right
oh my
that experience.
Oh, this was so good.
We have been on here almost an hour. So before you go, and I know that our listeners are going to really enjoy this conversation that we're having. So let me go to your questions again. I just wanted to know, because I know like when you're a person that's always about self-healing is a constant, it's an everyday thing all day. What are some of your greatest influences? Like, you know, have you ever, because, like, for me, Les Brown, Either Preacher, like, I get up some mornings and I play them while I'm getting myself ready for the day. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? These are some of my greatest influences. So who and what are some of your greatest influences that keep you going in your life?
Okay, so one, I got to speak to my dad every single day. Like, every other day, maybe, but he doesn't really like me stalking him. Like, he's a Sagittarius, too.
Okay. Which is,
that's another topic, because, like, both of my parents are Sagittarius. Wow. And they are, like, it's, like, drives me insane how I'm, like, both of them. But my dad, like, I have to speak to my dad. But with me, I'm more of a routine person.
Right.
So I'll go on Pinterest. I'll look up self-healing quotes and right. look at different quotes for the day, share it up on my my Instagram or on my Facebook. I'm also a writer. I also am a thinker. So I'm mm-hmm. always thinking about a feeling or an emotion or an interaction that I have and reflecting on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I do a lot of journaling.
Right.
As well in my notes on my Facebook. So, like, if I'm on the train, I write down how I'm feeling while mm-hmm. I'm sitting on that train ride, wherever I'm going. Wow. That's one of my things that I do
right.
for myself. Yeah. And also listen to music. Like what you said, I listen to a lot of Summer Walker.
Yes.
Janae Keo, Megan Thee Stallion. I like Nicki Minaj.
Right.
Luke. What's his name? Luke James. I think that's his name. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Lucky Dave. No, Lucky Dave. Lucky Dave. Lucky
I gotta Dave. Look him up. I don't even know who that is. I gotta
oh my God, he's fine. He's so fine. Girl,
you gotta text him. You gotta text his name to me so I can go to Apple Music.
Yeah, Lucky Dave. Oh, he's so fine. And he could sing to me any day. But Yeah, like I'm really an R&B soulful type of person. I also was raised in the church, so I listen to a lot of gospel, but my gospel is not today gospel.
Okay. I haven't heard any of today gospel. I feel like
I'm like a Clark Sisters, Yolanda Adams.
Right. I like a lot of those songs are very inspirational. I grew up in the church too.
But yeah, it's very old 90s. Kirk Franklin and his 90s gospel. Mm-hmm. Kirk Franklin and the Family.
Oh yeah, you know, those albums. Yep.
Mm-hmm. The albums. CC Wyans. BB and CC. And the Wyan brothers.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The Wyans.
Can't forget about them. Like my dad and like those were sounds and music that my dad used to like praise in church too in the house.
That's dope. Wow.
So for me, when I get in that feeling and I need my spirit to be clean, I'll play an album, or sometimes the radio on Pandora is good too.
Yeah,
the Pandora gospel radio. It'll just play any random song, a song I haven't heard in a long time, and I'll be like, oh my god, I forgot about this song, and I'm singing and I'm humming along to it.
Right.
So.
Right. Well, so now, aside from, you know, all the things you do as far as school and your playwrights and writing books and your motherhood and your relationship with your father, what are some of the things that you love about yourself in your life? And I want you to give me three examples.
One thing I love about myself is my sense of style.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm unique. And when I step outside, there's not going to be a lot of people who look like me. We might be similar.
Right.
Like, we may have the same pants on, but, like, how we rocking it is not going to be the same.
Right.
Like, that's just me. Yeah. Also, knowing myself.
Yes.
I feel like I had to learn about myself at a very early age. And I always have my self-awareness. My self-awareness is very enlightened and within me. Right. Like, so that makes it hard for people to tell me something about myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very in tune with who I am as a person.
Right. You have self love.
Have self love. Even though some days I feel like I just want to lay down in bed, I don't want to get up, I still push myself to do what I have to do because I have my self confidence.
Right.
And lastly, I don't really know. I don't know. But what would be something? I really don't know.
You got to give me one more. You got one more in you. Because I could think of one more for you. But I want to pull it out of you.
What is one more thing that I love about myself? I love my creativity.
Mm-hmm.
I love how, like, I could just, like, someone can just call me, like, yesterday, like, you could just call me and tell me, like, this is my idea.
Right.
And I could have 100 lists of ways that you, I could make a list for you, 100 ways of how you can execute it, how you can publish it.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is really a friend of mine. This turned out from like a playwright, and now we're cool. And I already told her she's definitely, once I get my business established, this will be my creative director right here.
Yeah, like I'm very creative, and that's something that I really love about me. Like, I'm really organized when it comes to like planning and writing out events. Like, I'm really good, and it's so dope because that's what I'm doing right now. Like, I'm working on doing an outdoor movie event for the kids in my community, so they have something positive to do over the summer because there ain't really nothing for them to do but run around in the streets and steal city bikes, and we don't need that in our community.
Amen. Amen.
Don't need that.
Well, I just want you to give the listeners three of your best quotes that have helped you to push forward in your life and in your struggles.
Okay. Well, my favorite quote, of course, is put your best foot forward.
Mm-hmm.
My second quote is, trust your dopeness. It's something that I've seen on, like, a Pinterest. It's no author. And last, it's a quote that I actually have tatted all around my knee, is what goes around comes around. Mm-hmm. And that, for me, is, like, the highlight of how I walk through life, because I believe in karma. I believe what you put in the universe is only what you receive back. That's why I always try to always, that's why I always say put my best foot forward. Right. Because I believe that if it's meant for me, it will be. And as long as I stay true to who I am and myself and trust my dopeness, I know that I will get it back in return.
Yes.
Not today, not tomorrow, but I know whatever it is, the universe is going to give it back. So,
yes,
that's it.
I appreciate you, sis. I appreciate you. So, tell our listeners, how do they get in contact with you? If they want to become a part of your play or if they want to purchase your book, let them know.
Yeah, so if anyone is interested in following me and just looking at my crazy madness that I post throughout the day, you can follow me at Bellow Inc. That is my IG. My Facebook is Ebony Rubin, but you could just normally, if you want to get in contact with me, the best way will be on my Instagram, because I respond quicker and you can just click the links to get to my other pages. So Bellow Inc. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's my IG, Bellow, 2 L's, 1 O. And like you said, don't play with me. Yeah, don't play with my last name. Because people be messing that up. It's Bellow. Okay? B-E-L-L-O. All right. And that's it. That's it. That's where people can say. And then if you go to my profile, you'll be able to find my personal blog, with the website for my blog as well is in the link in my bio too. So
yes. Yeah. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first. You want to purchase a book, you want to become a part of one of her plays, definitely hit her up, get in her DM. Professional only, business only.
Yeah.
We're not with the shenanigans. Okay.
We not with the shenanigans unless it's after 12. No.
Well, thank you. She said after 12. That's what she said. That's what she said. I don't have nothing to
do. Do not hit me up after 12, because after 12, it should not be no business. Don't even hit me up. Now, matter of fact, after 8 p.m. is not business for me. That's
right.
Downtime. So, yeah. Slide in my DM professionally. I'm willing to network, promote anything. I'm down.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you for coming on the show, Bellow Inc., Ebony Rubin.
Thank you for having me again.
Peace, royalty. I am Desire, and you're listening to Crowns and Tiaras podcast. So I am Desire simply means intelligent, ambitious motivator, determined empress, zealously inspiring royalty everywhere. And that is my goal, to inspire, uplift, and to motivate, even if I'm only doing it in small little ways. In these trying times that we're in, plenty of us just need to vent out our frustrations. Some of us want to share our businesses, and others just want to share your struggles and how you've overcome and be inspiring. And that's what this podcast is for. Okay, so tap into this podcast. Share your stories, share your struggles and how you've overcome, share your favorite quotes for inspiration, and all the ways that you love yourself. Peace, royalty.
Hey, it's your girl, Bellow. Thank you for listening to Crowns and Tiaras podcast. Go follow Desire on Twitter and Instagram at I Am Desire. That's Desire with a Z. Don't play with my sis now. Peace and royalty.